Hey guys, Mike with FlightBridge Ed. I've been an EMS training officer since 2008, and I don't know how many times I've had to deliver the bad news to someone about an expired certification. That means no work. That's where Piace comes in to save the day. Never be caught off guard again with an expired cert. Go to the App Store for your device and search for Piace, P-I-A-C-E-T, the one-stop application to manage and share all of your certifications. You know you don't want to be that guy or gal, and don't rely on your agency to tell you about your certifications. Go to Piace to manage your own certs and have some peace of mind. Download Piace today.
The content of this podcast is based on medical fact and evidence-based practice from credible authoritative sources, but is not a substitute for your institution's policies, procedures, common sense, or good judgment. The views and opinions are those of Eric Bauer and FlightBridge Ed in their entirety. This is the FlightBridge Ed Podcast, critical care and emergency medicine education for nurses and paramedics. Here's your host, Eric Bauer.
Hey everybody, Eric back with you. Today's podcast is going to be a quick review on a hot topic. Ketamine obviously is one of those medications that does so many things. Although we've seen a huge increase in ketamine education and our understanding of the medication, my travels bring me to places all over the country, all over the world, and you still hear these myths, these small little things about ketamine that are absolutely incorrect, and some of those things really do bug me. Now, I will highlight a couple little things we're learning about ketamine that maybe is a potential negative, but as far as ketamine and traumatic brain injuries or ketamine and increased ICP, that is complete fallacy. So this podcast is going to be titled Debunking the Continued Controversy with Ketamine in Traumatic Brain Injury Patients. And this goes for both adults and pediatrics. We have to remember ketamine does lots of different things. It blocks lots of different receptors. We know it affects those GABA receptors. That causes neural inhibition. It affects and blocks perception and sensation by stimulating and blocking the limbic and thalamic system in the brain. It also excites those opioid receptors. That induces that analgesic effect. So very, very few, if not any other medication out there that can boast that it does both analgesia and sedation. We also know that it blocks parasympathetic receptor response or stimulation. And so by doing that, it stimulates catecholamines. That increases heart rate, increases our contractility, actually increases cardiac output. Your MAP will increase, and it also increases cerebral blood flow. So you'll hear ketamine, or you'll read ketamine is cerebral protective. Where we look at ketamine from the perspective of this podcast, does it increase ICP? Well, the aspects of ICP, I would argue, and lots of other physicians would argue, and if you go back to the podcast I did with Mike Abernathy, Dr. Abernathy from up in Wisconsin, he highlights this perfectly, that our ICP increases are a lot of times associated with the pain response. Are we treating the pain correctly in these traumatic brain injury patients? We know a lot of these TBI patients have associated multi-system trauma injuries, fractures, things like that. And so they're definitely in pain. So are we taking care of that? That is the key. No matter what type of patient, you get somebody that has had a stroke, a head bleed, they're intubated, they're on the vent. If you're not managing their pain correctly, if you're not really being cognizant of that, their ICP will increase based on that pain response. So we have to remember that that is a big, big factor in ICP increases in our patients that we transport. Now, one of the aspects to the study that I'm going to kind of refer to here, this first study, is induction agents for rapid sequence intubation in adults outside the OR. And I think it's fitting, and this will be a follow-up podcast, I will tell you that there's some studies that are being done currently looking at this specifically. And I'll read exactly what this says. Ketamine causes sympathetic stimulation and is among the most hemodynamically stable of all available sedative induction agents, making it most attractive for those patients that are hypotensive or hemodynamically unstable requiring RSI. However, according to limited observational evidence and clinical experience, patients who are depleted of catecholamines due to their underlying disease or otherwise an increased risk of shock have a blunted sympathetic response and may even develop hypotension following administration of ketamine and RSI. So this is something we're finding, we're seeing this. And this is very similar to the argument of removing fentanyl and why you've seen all these companies remove fentanyl prior to RSI is because if we are stimulating that sympathetic response in somebody that has limited catecholamines that already is right at the max, right? They can't handle anymore. They're that sick. And we can obviously put them over the edge and obviously then put them in arrest. So there's lots of current studies going on about that factor right there. And what better population of patients than in the critical care HIMSS environment to study that aspect and look at that specifically. And so, you know, I've started to talk about this in our review classes that maybe in these really sick patients that have a high shock index, remember a shock index greater than 0.9, maybe bring that dose down by half, maybe even go 3/4. As long as you're giving them some type of dissociative dose, you're gonna be fine. But giving them a full 2 mg/kg dose is probably going to be hazardous in these very, very highly sick patients. So let's get back to our topic at hand, elevated intracranial pressure. So the controversy per this study persists regarding the use of ketamine in patients with head injuries due to concerns about elevating ICPs. Opponents emphasize that ketamine can cause an increase in ICP through that sympathetic stimulation, potentially exacerbating the condition of such patients. However, when ketamine is used, the rise in ICP may not occur. Furthermore, by increasing cerebral perfusion pressure, ketamine may benefit patients with neurological injuries. On balance, evidence suggesting ketamine elevates ICP is weak, and the evidence that harm may ensue is weaker. We believe ketamine is an appropriate induction agent in RSI for patients with ICP elevation in normal blood pressure or hypotension. In patients with hypertension and suspected ICP elevation, ketamine may be avoided. So where is that line? Where do you draw that line in the sand? Well, we've always taught 180 systolic is kind of that top end. You have to also think about this, and I think it's real easy to get clouded when you see somebody that's hypertensive that has a pressure of even 170. 175, are you going to give ketamine? Well, you have to ask yourself, why are they that high? Are they normally that high? That's something you may or may not be able to answer. Is this based on a pain response? We know that that is where we see our patients. If they're in a lot of pain, if their sedation isn't adequate, you can see that blood pressure skyrocket. So maybe giving a medication like ketamine in some of those cases will bring that pressure down. Again, we have to critically think. We can't be cookbook clinicians. I just emphasize that. You have to critically think about what's going on. Let's look at our second study. The second study is the ketamine effect on ICP and traumatic brain injury. So this abstract, our goal was to perform a systematic review of literature on the use of ketamine in traumatic brain injury patients and its effects on ICP. What they did is they searched and produced about 371 citations, 7 articles, 6 manuscripts, and 1 meeting proceeding, which were considered for review for all utilizing ketamine while documenting ICPs in severe TBI patients. 3 studies reported a significant decrease in ICP with ketamine bolus, cerebral perfusion pressures, and mean blood pressures increased in 2 studies, leading to a decrease in vasopressor use in 1. No significant adverse effects related to ketamine were reported in any of these studies. Now, again, we have to also think about some of these studies. A lot of these studies that we were referring to right here are retrospective, observational, looking at past data. We know that as far as the evidence goes, this is actually considered an Oxford level 2B grade C evidence. So if we look at what does that mean, I will put a link to how they grade these, but a grade 2B is essentially individual cohort studies, including low quality data, maybe a retrospective. And then when you go down to the actual grade, grade C is level 4 studies or taking specific data from level 2 or level 3 studies. So I will again put this in the show notes so you can look at this if that's something that interests you. So the whole point is that Oxford level 2B grade C evidence to support that ketamine does not increase ICP in severe TBIs that are sedated and ventilated, and in fact may lower it in selected cases. Our last study that I'm going to refer to is a study that I use a lot in when I speak on this at different conferences. So the effect of ketamine on ICP and cerebral perfusion pressure and health outcomes, a systematic review. This was specifically looking at 4,896 titles, of which 10 studies met the inclusion criteria, reporting on 953 patients. One study deemed a low risk of biases in all quality assessment domains. Ultimately, the conclusion was, according to the available literature, the use of ketamine in critically ill patients does not appear to adversely affect patient outcomes. And I think if you look at this, and again, I will put these in the show notes, when they look at 30-day discharge, they look at overall long-term neurological function, any of these studies, all of them show that there's no difference. These patients do perfectly fine. So I think we have to be very, very cautious in jumping on the bandwagon. I think it's important for each one of us to take the time and research this. Again, we all work underneath a medical director, and so that's where you have to bring the evidence to the medical director. You know, I totally understand that there are medical directors out there, maybe more old school, that maybe had a bad experience back in the 1970s, maybe 80s, that don't want to hear any part of ketamine. But we also have to understand that if you don't bring this data to them and you don't show them, maybe they're just unaware. And so we have to have an open mind. And I would argue that many, many medical practitioners out in this world, we're open-minded. We just have to be sometimes convinced by the science. And although there hasn't been true top-end research focusing on this, a lot of stuff that we do in medicine is without studies. There's no basis for it at all, and we do it every single day. So I think as far as ketamine administration in these traumatic brain injury patients, it's very, very safe. We have to think about all the other benefits. As I did highlight, though, in that one study, and we will do a follow-up podcast on the aspects of using ketamine in these severe shock state patients, and when do we maybe reduce that dose in those patients? Maybe that sympathetic response, that catecholamine receptor, activation that we see, maybe that's too much in some of these patients. And that's where we have to really watch our patients. And that's looking at that shock index and identifying, are they going to benefit from a lower dose? There's no medication out there that is perfect. But ketamine is one of the best medications I've ever used. When you look at the plasma protein binding aspects of it, you look at how it interfaces with other medications, really there's not many better. So again, this was just a short podcast. I just wanted to try to open up the dialogue regarding ketamine. If you hadn't seen these studies, and there's lots more out there, you just search this topic. There's tons of studies out there that are highlighting the exact same thing. There's no clinical evidence to support that mindset or thought process. Again, as always, if you have any questions, please email me at eric.bauer@flightbridgeed.com, and I will talk to you soon.
This has been a production of the Flight Bridge Ed Podcast, leading the way in pre-hospital critical care and emergency medicine education.